A lot of people have heard of the ozone layer because they'll talk about the hole in the ozone layer, they used to. And so that's a layer of ozone gas that covers the entire planet and protects us from harmful radiation from the sun. You also, our bodies actually naturally make ozone too. A lot of people don't know that. It's a part of our immune system. So it's something that is native to our bodies, but a lot of people aren't aware of that.
He's a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, inspirational speaker, certified nutrition coach, plant-powered athlete, and host of the number one holistic health podcast in the world, Nathan Crane.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to give you a free gift that I have spent over a decade researching thousands of hours of peer-reviewed studies and interviewing hundreds of world-leading functional medical doctors and cancer conquerors that lays out a blueprint for helping your mind and body become a cancer-fighting fortress for natural cancer prevention and healing. And that's my Amazon number one best-selling book, Becoming Cancer-Free. The physical copy sells for like 10 bucks on Amazon, which, you know, you can go get that if you want, but I'm happy to give you the ebook absolutely free. Just head over to becomingcancerfree.com and you can download that ebook instantly. Again, that's becomingcancerfree.com, and it's yours as a gift from me to you for tuning into this podcast. All right, let's get to the show. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I am joined by my friend Micah Lowe, who is the founder of Metaskill, metaskill.com, and he is an expert in ozone therapy. He has worked with thousands of doctors, educating them on ozone therapy. He's done massive research over the years. And he's just truly a, you know, investigative researcher and journalist, if you will, investigative researcher on ozone therapy. And that's what I want to talk with you about today, Micah. There's a lot of confusion about ozone. There's a lot of, let's call it, misinformation about it. There's a lot of excitement about it. I know a lot of the doctors that I work with love ozone. They use it with their patients for lots of different things. You know, there's rectal ozone, there's, you know, ozone that's used on wounds. There's all kinds of different ways to use ozone. There's also probably some dangers of ozone. So, you know, I think the exciting part about it is what a lot of these doctors and clinics are seeing with, you know, recovery of health conditions when using ozone as well. So, you know, thanks for coming on the podcast to help clear up some of this stuff and really give, you know, share with my audience what they need to know about ozone.
Yeah. Thanks, Nathan. I really appreciate you just bringing me on the podcast. You know, I've been looking forward to having this discussion with you and being able to dig into it. You know, it's something I'm really passionate about and was helpful to my brother when he had cancer. And so that's why I got into this whole space. So I'm very excited to be able to talk about its applications within the context of cancer and, you know, the broader applications of how it helps health. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff you can go into with it, like you mentioned.
Yeah. So what exactly happened with your brother? What cancer was he diagnosed with? And like, how did ozone help him?
Yeah. So he had a brain cancer. I'm going to butcher the name, but oligodendroglioblastoma. Mm-hmm. And so it was a rare form of brain cancer. I know there's lots of rare forms, right? But at any rate, when I was about 14, so I was relatively young, our parents called my brother and I. We were at soccer practice or basketball practice or something like that. I can't remember where we were, but said, hey, you guys need to, you know, come home right away. We're going to have a discussion. So we thought something bad was going on. It was kind of apparent, right? So anyway, we get to the house and I get a little bit emotional. So if I cry, I'm sorry, but you know, it's my story and it was pretty impactful to me. So, yeah. We get to the house and, our whole family is around in the living room and we thought maybe we'll move, maybe, something, I don't know, something big. Right. And, they said, Matt has terminal brain cancer and he's probably not going to live for the next year. And this was when I was about 14 year old. Just really, obviously it put a pit in your stomach and just a wrench in your heart and just about everything you can imagine. A lot of emotions go through. We have a very close-knit family. I'm one of 11, so there's a lot of kids in my family, which is really cool. But you know, Matt, somebody I looked up to. And yeah, kind of. So speeding up though, he ended up doing basically outliving every projection the doctors gave over the next 6 years or so. By that point, I was in nursing school wanting to become a physician myself. I was going to become a nurse first and then kind of work into becoming a physician was the plan. I wanted to do something called Mercy Ships, which is a philanthropic organization that lands like a big carrier boat into a bay and then provides like free surgeries and medicine to people that are in need. So from a pretty young age, I actually wanted to do that since I was like 12 or so. And so that was what I was working towards. Around that time too, it was just like very thankful that Matt had outlived all these projections. And so there were some, you know, potentially good things in the medical system. He was going to Johns Hopkins and whatnot. So I don't want to be too negative on it at all. It's just, it was kind of apparent though that they were pretty condescending to anything else, you know, we're doing the real work kind of attitude and, you know, just pretty rude and condescending and not very open to other things. So it was like, well, what else can we find for Matt that'll be helpful for him? Somebody at our church had recommended doing hyperbaric oxygen. So,
was he doing chemo radiation at that time?
Oh yeah. He was doing the full thing. Right. At this point we weren't, you know, our family became progressively more naturally minded with time, kind of going through this. And that's the story for a lot of people. I imagine a lot of listeners as well on the podcast have gone through that where you kind of become disenchanted with time, but we really hadn't had big involvement with the medical system up to that point. Didn't have much of a need, but then, you know, became very involved with that, obviously.
Why for you guys, what do you think about that experience led you to look for more natural options? Like, what was it? Was it the side effects? Was it the deterioration of his well-being because of the treatments? Like, what do you think was kind of started leading you to like, hey, what other options are there? What about natural options? That sort of stuff. Like, what was that?
Well, the interventions that they offer are cut, burn, and poison. Right. And so it's when you're seeing that over and over, it's like cancer grows back. We can cut it out. We can cut it out. We can cut it out. We can try more radiation. We can do more poison, et cetera. It's like, well, it, you know, I'm very thankful that he's alive and with us, but there's got to be some other things that we can look at. And as you start to look into things and talk to even people like yourself that understand, hey, there's actually a lot of stuff out there. And there is this very rigid medical system that is run by money, that is run by corruption. But even within that system, it's very challenging. Like if you were to say something was free to do and it cured cancer, would that get FDA approval? Probably not, because it's not going to make any money, right?
No, it wouldn't get FDA approval. It would not get FDA approval, number one. And number two, it would be censored and banned and not, you know, it would try to be kept secret, or anyone who did that thing is made to look like a fool or doesn't know what they're talking about. And then there's no science, and then there's no money for scientific research on it, because all the money for the high level scientific research goes towards things that are actually patentable and things that you can put, you know, into a prescription, things you can put a brand on and then you can sell, right? Because high level scientific research is very expensive. You know, randomized controlled trials with humans and hundreds of humans for years is very, very expensive. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. So that kind of stuff, just, it's not going to happen for something that's free and accessible, unfortunately, unless you had, you know, a philanthropy, you know, billionaires that are donating millions of dollars for this research to be done. But it's just not happening right now. Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollock, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollock, go to drpawluk.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com/intro to cancer. You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I use Maison Beljansky's wellness products. Maison Beljansky's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljansky formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljansky's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljansky has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order 4 products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljansky.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljansky.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off.
Well, and furthermore, it can be more than just millions. It can be hundreds of millions for, say, a class 3 de novo, which is what ozone, for instance, would be categorized as, because you have to go through so many more additional structures for that to gain approval. And so back in the 70s, they actually had this stipulation, this changeover, where you need basically this prior precedent of a device for it not to be a de novo. De novo is very hard to get through the FDA. It's actually pretty rare. So you can even spend a couple $100 million, and at the end of the day, they might still say no. So it's like you are still risking all of the work up into that point. And so that's why it's this investor-run system, because, I mean, you're not going to invest. If you're trying to make a return on your money, you're not going to invest into something that is like likely to get squashed in the end, or like isn't going to make a return on your money, and you're not going to risk your own money. So these companies go out and find a bunch of investors, and so everybody kind of pools their resources. Anyway, so I would say here's the big thing that really created the changeover in the mindset was we did the hyperbaric oxygen with Matt, and he had improved critical thinking processes, better sleep, much better energy. The toxic side effects that he was facing, not nearly as prevalent. So everything was like better for him. Life was just better. Even if you just want to call it quality of life metrics, which, you know, obviously has an impact, they were so much better. And so we kind of presented that to the physicians, and they were like, well, you know, it's probably a placebo, or, you know, if that makes you feel good, buddy, then go ahead. Like, you can keep on doing your little hyperbaric oxygen chamber. And that's kind of the attitude, right? And then you're like, what the heck? This has helped him more than anything else that you guys have tried, from a quality of life standpoint. And you're just kind of dismissing it as like, we're like doing this weird thing, placebo thing. And now hyperbaric oxygen is obviously a big thing, has a lot more research behind it and has much broader acceptance. But that was kind of the sentiment that we were given. And so it opens up your mind when you're like, well, Johns Hopkins, the leader in cancer care, doesn't recognize this thing, hyperbaric oxygen, is being helpful for Matt. I wonder what else is going to be helpful for Matt. And then right. You get down the rabbit hole.
Then you go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, right. So well, that's really what created that shift.
Yeah, that's powerful. And that's very common, right? And thank you for sharing that, because I think people can relate to that. To your point, I mean, I had a cancer patient who we coach who basically told me, they were talking to their oncologists, and they're like, yeah, I'm learning all about changing my diet. And, you know, I hear the diet can make a big difference for cancer. And in fact, there's this anti-cancer diet, which is something that I teach and have written, you know, many eBooks and videos and masterclasses about. all backed by lots and lots of evidence and many, many case studies. And they presented it to their oncologist, and you know, the oncologist's response was, yeah, if diet had anything to do with cancer, you could just change your diet and then cancer would just go away.
And it's metabolic disorder.
I like, you know, it's like, you can't, when you understand this thing, you can't do anything but laugh and feel sad at the same time that these oncologists don't know this. They don't know anything about diet. Most of them, right? Most of them are not trained on diet. They're not trained on functional medicine. They're not trained on natural therapies. They don't even realize the connection between the metabolic dysfunction of the cells chronically fermenting, leading to cancer through, you know, mitochondrial damage and DNA damage, and how diet is directly associated with that. And it's like, they just don't know. And that's the problem, is a lack of education. And it's not because they're not smart. It's because the education that they receive in the textbooks is primarily funded by pharmaceutical companies. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's, you look it up. Anyone can look it up. You know, 60 to 70% of funding for medical textbooks comes from pharmaceutical companies. Why do you think you go to the doctor and the first thing they do when you have a symptom of something is prescribe you drugs? That's what they're trained on, right? And so they're not bad people. They just don't know, unfortunately. And now the doctors you and I work with, they're the ones that are interested in this stuff. They're the ones that are getting functional medicine certifications, additional training. They're the ones that are, you know, implementing natural therapies. They're the ones that are seeing results with ozone therapy and changing their patients' diets and reversing diseases. We see this all the time, and yet we talk about it and we get censored and we get shut down and the FDA comes after you and all this craziness that happens because, as you said, there's a lot of money involved and a lot of money, unfortunately, that drives certain corporations to, you know, try to blot out anybody else who's doing really good things for the general population that they see as a threat, taking away from their bankroll.
Yeah, we did a tour of the Biopharma Crescent, which is in North Carolina. I don't want to go into too much detail on that, but I remember turning to Joe, who was with me. I was like, if we had a camera on, we'd be in a river somewhere. but the reason we did this is because, you know, we work with something called ozonated oil, which you can infuse ozone gas into an oil to create peroxides that are helpful for things. And so we were working with another company out of Europe who is kind of just oblivious to the medical corruption at large in the United States, right? So they're like, yeah, we just want to go and talk to these universities and these government officials, et cetera, et cetera. It was terrifying to see just like how cohesive this mesh of the universities, the pharmaceutical companies, even the DOD and the government officials that were there just operate in such cohesion where there's almost no distinction between who is who. And it was, to us, very apparently corrupt, you know. And these are people who are, they're not intentionally, for the most part, there's obviously malicious players. But
sure,
a lot of these bureaucrats and these people that we're working with, they're not intentionally doing something that is negative. Like, they're trying to do something that they perceive as good. And they don't believe in all the stuff that we believe in, you know, like hyperbaric oxygen as being like a good example of that, right? Those physicians just didn't believe that it did anything beneficial for him beyond a placebo. And so they have no awareness that there's these other things out there. So they're growing with this in this system of like so-called science that's trying to find drug targets and different ways to work with it that are invasive. And they think that is the way. But yeah, it was frightening in a way. It's like, man, who can stand up against this? Even we saw Purdue Pharma, you know, a lot of people think that got shut down. They're responsible for the opioid crisis. The Sackler family, pretty evil, right? That would be one of the malicious players, but that's still up and running. We saw the steam rolling out of the building. It's still producing OxyContin, still, you know, committing crimes on the public.
No, they get a, you know, $2 billion, $3 billion fine, a slap on the wrist, and they say, don't do that again. And then the company goes out and just produces a new drug, a new form of it, a new variation, you know, lies about the science. I mean, these are criminal organizations. They get caught all the time lying about science, lying about their controlled trials, taking out data. This isn't conspiracy. Like, this happens all the time, and it's well documented. You can read the court cases. I've read them, hundreds and hundreds of court cases against, you know, all these major pharmaceutical companies that literally lie all the time. And then we're supposed to trust them with our health and well-being. You know, when they're literally, I mean, look at Vioxx killed potentially over 50,000 people, and they knew that it was dangerous, and they hid that from the public, and they fudged up the science, and they put it out there anyway. You know, 50,000 plus potential people died from it.
That's a low number. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a low number, right? Like, there's, you know, there's projections that could be in the hundreds of thousands or more, but, you know, still one life is too many. 50,000 or more is insane to think about from a drug. And then they get a few $1 billion fine, slap on the wrist, take the drug off the market. And then they just come out with the next drug. Like, it's so criminal and so insane to think about. You know, if this happened with ozone, this happened with supplements, right? If it did, one person dying.
Oh, I'd be in prison. Like, no, I think that's,
it's the end of the world.
Part of the,
you know,
proof of the safety of this stuff too is like, we'd be in prison, right? You can't kill people, much less 50,000, with this kind of stuff. You go to jail. There's no. It's really quite mind blowing. Like, what other system can you murder thousands of people and get a financial slap on the wrist? It's nuts.
No, it's not. It's insane. It's insane. And yet, and then the problem is people still believe that these drugs are gonna help them. Like, yeah, they help in certain ways, but they believe that the companies are looking out for their best interest, right? Because they believe their doctor. And the doctor believes that, you know, these corporations are looking out for their patients' best interests. And it is. It's really just that cycle of ignorance, unfortunately, that just trickles from the top down. And we know there are malicious players. We know that these people are hiding this stuff intentionally. They get caught with it. They get emails that, you know, oh, this is happening. Oh, well, we're not going to say anything about it, right? Like, we know that they are doing it for the profits and not caring if people die in the process. Not everyone, but there are people that get caught. And then what? Do they go to prison? No, they don't go to prison. You know, they get fined. And guess what? That money goes FTC, FDA, they get their billions, government gets their billions, and then the system just goes on because there's too much money at play. So it's essential. Point being is like, well, what can you do about it? One, you can vote for Bobby Kennedy. You know, I don't talk about politics too much on this, yeah, but like, yeah. Vote for Bobby Kennedy, and it, you know, go watch, you know, 20 hours of his podcast, and you'll understand why I say that. He's the only
real candidate we have.
I haven't lived very long. Yeah, I haven't lived a very long life, but in my short life, he's the only candidate that I feel good about voting for. Number one. Number two, the only person who could really potentially unravel that whole system and do something meaningful for the health of this country. You know, and number three, someone who's been doing that work for decades and who's, you know, one of the most high integrity people that I've ever seen. I mean, I've watched dozens and dozens of hours of his podcasts and conversations, and it's like, this dude's the real deal, you know, he really is. And he could really make a big difference. I really hope he gets in there.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm a fan of his. It's kind of interesting to see, like, I don't know, there's so many politicians that are just so scripted in their approach, right? They don't go off script. And so it's like, you get somebody that actually speaks their mind, that actually walks you through the thought processes they're having, and you kind of short circuit. You're like, is a politician actually supposed to answer a question non-politically? Yeah, it's amazing to see. There's very few people like that that I can recall. And you know, with this upcoming election, it's like you have two candidates that have been. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's like, how? And I didn't mean to get into like politics from this. I'm not a overtly like political person by nature, but you know, how are these two guys, the Trump and the Biden, like the best candidates for running the United States of America? It makes no sense to me. It's like, how did these guys even get into that position? Where are all these like other really intelligent, well-educated, genuine, personable people that, you know, should be running for the presidency? It's like, it makes no sense. It's just because the news cycles cover them pretty much exclusively, and they just kind of keep the hamster wheel moving, I guess.
Hey, so if you've been following me for any time now, you know that I often talk about Helin 951, the nitrogen fermented organic soy drink. I first learned about it at an integrative cancer event years ago, and I've been taking this myself for a long time. It's so potent and it has a strong flavor, so I add their organic mint powder to it, and it's easy to take any time of day. I usually take it in the mornings. You know, I'm constantly looking into natural health products, and the ones that catch my eye are the ones with years of proven results and the science and research to back them up. I love that Helin 951 checks all of these boxes. Made from a unique 100% organic soybean grown in the high mountains of Mongolia, Helin 951 has some incredible health properties. Just a few of the benefits are more energy, better sleep, detox, longevity, better immune function, and some fantastic anti-cancer compounds. The folks over at Helin have made a page just for our followers to learn more. You can head over to helin951.com/crane. That's H-A-E-L-A-N 951.com/crane. They have special discounted packages there for you to get you started. And if you use the promo code CRANE, C-R-A-N-E, at checkout, they will also give you free shipping. So head over and grab this special offer for yourself and use the free shipping promo code CRANE, or just give them a call if that's easier for you. They are so easy to work with and have over 32 years in the industry. Again, that's helin951.com/crane. One of my good friends and integrative cancer doctors, Michael Carlfelt, owns the Carlfelt Center in Meridian, Idaho. And I'm really grateful that their team has sponsored this episode. Dr. Carlfelt is a globally renowned naturopathic doctor in integrative oncology, and his center pioneers cutting-edge alternative therapies to combat cancer. They offer cutting-edge therapies, including high-dose IVs, ozone therapy, curcumin, mistletoe, photodynamic therapy, and many others within their 17,000 square foot advanced medical and wellness treatment facility. With decades of expertise, they offer comprehensive root cause medicine tailored to support your healing journey. You can begin your transformative experience with a complimentary 15-minute discovery call. You can call them at 208-338-8902. Or visit their website at thecarlfeltcenter.com. Again, that's 208-338-8902. Or go to the website, thecarlfeltcenter.com. Are you looking for a powerful immune system hack? Well, our sponsor, Better Way Health, produces one of the highest quality beta-glucans on the market. And beta-glucan is a powerful immune system booster, being called the most effective dietary supplement for a healthy immune system by the American Nutraceutical Association. I personally take beta-glucan from Better Way Health to help keep my immune system strong, and I'm grateful they're offering all of my listeners a special discount code when you order today. Head over to nathancrane.com/beta-glucan for your special offer today. Go get a discount. Try it out for yourself. That's nathancrane.com/beta-glucan. I think most people vote for Biden because they feel like that's their best option because they don't want Trump. I really think, like, people I talk to who vote for Biden, who are Democrat, who are liberal.
I don't want either of them.
Yeah. It's like, they're like, yeah, I'll just vote for Biden because, yeah, he's better than Trump. It's like, yeah, that doesn't, you know, vote for the lesser of two evils. Like, that's not a good way to live our lives, people, you know? And then you got Trump on the other hand too, which is like, and then people love him or hate him. And the people who love him are like, yeah, he's the greatest thing since, you know, sliced bread. And he's, you know, he actually gets the working class. And I'm like, dude's a billionaire who does not support the working class. I'm sorry, guys. Like, he is a charlatan. And he went in there talking about, he got everyone convinced he's going to drain the swamp. And then he goes in and literally hires the people who make the swamp worse. Like, are you kidding me? He just fooled everybody. You know, that's really what he did. I don't want either of them in there either. And then now we actually have a real candidate that I feel like amazingly excited about, who's not the lesser of two evils, but actually, like, speaks truth, you know, is genuine, deeply cares about people, has an amazing track record of like cleaning up, you know, polluted rivers and taking down corrupt corporations and fighting against the FDA and FTC and, you know, Monsanto and all these big corporations and winning for the little guy, like actually doing what he says he's going to do. All these other guys just talk about it.
A real representative, right?
Yeah. Somebody who's actually living it. And that's exciting. Like it really is exciting. It's exciting for me for the first time in my life to actually want to go vote. Like I have not voted before because I've never seen a candidate that I felt like if I have to vote the lesser of two evils, I'm not going to vote, period. But if I'm like, oh, I'm actually super excited about voting for someone, like, dude, I'm ready. Like, I'll spread the word. Like, I don't care. I'm not even political, but like, I'll let everybody know, you know, it's the future of our children, you know, it's the future of our parents' grandchildren that's at stake. And if things don't change with this, you know, corporate merger of corruption between state and corporations, if things don't change, like it's only going to continue to get worse as it has been doing the past 100 years.
It'll be interesting to see how the current get, because there's a lot of change happening between like AI and technology advancing that I think could produce more like inequality where like corporations have even more power. But I also see that there's a potential that it can kind of make some transferences into other people's hands. So for example, I think within the medical system, there's a couple of different ways that you can reform it. You can reform it through the institution. So you can be like a part of the institution as a politician, et cetera, and do your best to make some reformations there. And I think that would be like, you know, RFK, right? That he would be kind of reforming from the inside. The alternative to that is a parallel institution that grows and grows and grows and eventually becomes a good enough alternative to where people can kind of transfer over to that and it receives adoption. So I think with some of these technologies, and that's what I've been working on for the past couple of years with the multiomic stuff that I think I mentioned to you in the past, but it's basically this new way of collecting to giving people access to their own biology. And so what we're doing is we're essentially testing all these layers of systems biology. So you have your genome, your transcriptome, your proteome, your microbiome, your metabolome. This gets a little bit deep, but I'll bring it back together. So you get this really deep probing of a person's biology where you can pinpoint where the issue lies. And so that kind of information is really helpful. And then you couple that with something called digital twinning, which is in silico modeling of a person's biological data. And by the way, this is all like on blockchain. So people actually have the keys to their own data, utmost transparency. It's democratized. You know, a sale of their data does not happen unless they want it to ever. And nobody can access it unless they want them to. But with this digital twinning, you can actually make essentially a biological replica of this person on a computer. And then you can simulate intervention. So you could simulate hyperbaric oxygen. You can simulate a certain diet and see what kind of effect that's going to have on all these layers of systems biology, such as the metabolism, et cetera. And so I think what can happen with time in a system like that is that you gather so much data and so much information about what is actually helpful for people that you could come to a point that you say, no, that chemotherapy is not a good idea. Like we objectively know this and we have more data than you. Like, what are you going to refute?
That's like these are the alternatives.
The blueprint, what?
I was just going to say that's like a digital version of what Brian Johnson is doing with his blueprint project, right? But this is like a simulation, so you don't have to put your body through all of that experimentation. It's a simulation of all the experimentation, and then see what actually happens from that. That's actually super fascinating.
Yeah, it is. So I think what could happen eventually though is, you know, say you have 100,000, and again, this is all on blockchain, so only with consent of an individual, but you have the information of all these people and all these interventions. So you have chemotherapy banked, you have hyperbaric oxygen, you have ozone, you have diets, you have et cetera. And then it's also more curtailed to the individual too, because that is an important component that a lot of people don't recognize, is that we are different. We do have different I mean, we operate similar, right? We need sleep, we need exercise, we need to diet, but there's nuances within that that are important to take into account. Even something simple like CoQ10 or ubiquinol, which is going to be more impactful for somebody? Well, based on the pathway that is deficient, there's actually one of those options might be better. But you can develop this system where you can, the drugs, the invasive interventions are the last thing to get recommended, right? And only if absolutely essential for somebody's health. This surgery is absolutely essential for your health to keep you alive right now, until we can find something else too that is more natural and bringing you into it. And, you know, I'm not 100% natural to where, like, I'll say I will never do any sort of drug. If I break my leg, give me the morphine, right? Like, I don't want to be screaming in pain when I can diminish that experience of pain for, you know, the coming days. But that being said, I definitely want to make sure that we're ruling out everything before we get to drugs, before we get to invasive surgeries, before we get to radiation or what have you. And so I think this idea of a parallel institution where we're really getting a handle on what is actually working for people and what is not working for people, that has a potential to be kind of a new kind of system we operate in. Again, though, like that's kind of like heady and theoretical, right? Like, but we're actually building it. Like, we're actually doing this now. We sell the product. But the thing that the reason I got involved with it is because, like, as I came across these researchers that were working on this in academia, and then we ended up getting along really, really well, just like as old friends, and really serendipitous. It was a time where I was able to take something on, and I didn't want to. So for like a year, I was just kind of trying to help them to develop and encourage them in continuing their work. But then I kind of realized it's like, well, if this gets into the wrong hands, that's also like not a good thing either. And there's a lot of companies that are working on this, but I don't know of any company that has like successfully built it out. So it's pretty exciting. Anyway, that we could shoot off into that and talk for hours or what have you. I know there's
Is this you guys, Multiomics? Is this yours?
It would be, no, that's not it. So Multiomics is a term. I just put the website in the chat here. It's therio.me. But Multiomics is a term for the systems biology approach to testing somebody. So it's like, we're going to profile, rather than a few markers in the liver, a few markers in here, we're going to profile the metabolism. So right now we can monitor 68% of the metabolism. Within a year, we'll be well over 80%, which is much, 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 much higher than most anybody can do. And we do this all on frictionless sample collection. You know, technology has been progressing. We use an old machine called a GCMS, which is gas chromatography, mass spectrometry. And so this is a very sensitive machine, but we can actually get a few drops of blood for profiling the metabolism. For the microbiome, it's called a bunny wipe, where they do essentially wipe after an expression. And then that is taken and put into a collection tube and sent off to the lab. So the amount of biological sample that we need is getting lower, which means that people can do it at home. We haven't figured out proteomics yet, which is proteins, all your hormones and that kind of stuff. How are we going to do that at home? But we're getting there and we're working on it.
This is crazy.
So
this
yeah,
this is pretty exciting. This is pretty interesting stuff for sure. This is a blood test you can do at home right now. And
correct.
Then,
so what?
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Yep. Yeah. So what that's going to do is that's going to profile the metabolism. I talked from kind of a high level viewpoint. So what we're building towards is integrated multiomics, is what it's called. Everybody's going to be talking about multiomics and digital twinning in 2 to 3 years. So you first heard it here, but
it's the first I've heard of this as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, if you go onto YouTube and plug it in and just type multiomics, you'll find a bunch of researchers, academics talking about it. But there hasn't really been the financial support behind it yet, because a lot of people are still trying to figure it out. So what we have differently is that we've figured out how to do the integration of these different layers of systems biology. So how does the microbiome interface with the metabolism? Because that relationship between the two is a whole nother set of biomarkers, essentially, because the microbiome Over 50% of the molecules in your metabolism have been synthesized or modified by what's in your gut. And thereby, also going back to what you said, is diet is very important, right? Because cancer is a metabolic disorder. And if 50% of the molecules in your metabolism are modified or synthesized by the microbiome, well, there's your answer for diet. But that's a whole nother layer, right? So now you're getting information between these various layers. Right now, we just have the metabolome. We'll have the microbiome in February of 2024 or 25. End of 25, we should have the proteins, the proteomic layer as well. So that'd be the first three layers, and then progressing from there. And then genetic testing, just as a side note, is like actually not very helpful. So most all diseases that people have are from gene environment expression, which means
exactly
that it's not a genetic disorder. You can have propensities or predispositions, but that doesn't mean that you're, like, for example, if people, they talk about the MTHFR gene, right? And the mutation in that. So what does that mean? It means that you can't methylate like folic acid. So you need to increase like methylfolate in your diet. But it doesn't actually, if you have that gene mutation, it doesn't actually mean that you need to have that supplementation. It just means that you're predisposed to likely not have enough. So in the metabolism, you can actually see, does this person have enough or not? So it's like the intersection between what you're hardwired to do, your genome, and what you actually do. And the metabolism sits on that intersection between the gene and environment expression. So it's like this really dynamic snapshot of what's actually happening from a metabolic perspective in somebody's body right now. And I kind of got into all these different layers, but right now it's metabolism.
Oh, it's pretty cool. Actually, I want to take a test. I'd love to. I like how it's, you know, like these 12 key health scores shows, you know, the different systems, whether it's the brain, liver, skin, biological age, mitochondria, inflammation, cardiovascular, nutritional, gut, mutations, and environmental toxin exposures. And then I like how, you know, these early insights, basically by looking at the metabolites, you can basically give some guidance and ideas of like, hey, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're probably headed for, you know, cancer or something similar. And here's some changes you can make to hopefully avoid that. Right.
Yeah. And so there's going back to kind of the story of my brother, is my calling in life is to reduce suffering in the world. And so Dr. Jasby, when I first met him, he was actually talking about his research for early detection in Alzheimer's and then certain cancers, not all cancers, but he has a lot of publications on how to detect stage one ovarian and breast cancer as an example. And so that was like really impactful, because if you, and I know a lot of cancers go into spontaneous remission, but even without that, if you go and you can find if somebody has stage one cancer, their likelihood of survival goes up exponentially, not just over 5 years markers that are traditionally used, but over 20-year markers. And there's studies on this. And that is also regardless of if they do conventional or don't do any conventional treatments. So the psychology of an individual changes, and they make the appropriate lifestyle adjustments for them to put that into remission, right? Just with early detection, no other changes made. And so you can have the potential for a really big impact with doing something like that. So I know there's so much you can go into there. It's just fascinating.
So what ended up happening with your brother?
My brother Matt passed away in 2018, unfortunately. So he outlived projections of physicians by approximately 18 years. And so I'm really thankful for the time that we had together. We did work on ozone together for about 6 years. That was also something that was really helpful for him. And so ozone does have a lot of research in the context of as an adjunct to other traditional cancer treatments, typically is what they've done a lot of research on. So, without getting into ozone too much, Matt passed away in 2018 and he had a good life, and just really thankful for the time that we did have with him. But along the way, we did find a lot of things that were really helpful to him in increasing his critical thinking and increasing his energy and decreasing his negative symptoms, increasing his sleep quality, et cetera.
What were some of the key things that you guys found that you that seemed to work?
Well, diet, as you said, of course. So having a good diet.
What'd you do? What'd you do for diet specifically?
Yeah, so he would do kind of a mix of keto and paleo. You know, sometimes he'd do like keto, sometimes he would do paleo. And that was pretty helpful to him. You know, I think the important thing is that you're not eating processed foods, honestly, as long as it's grown. You know, I do ascribe to a mix, an omnivorous diet. But I think as long as you are staying away from packaged foods, trying to identify where it's coming from and with the least amount of manipulation possible, I think is a good thing. So when humans get involved, the food quality seems to go down. So, you know, the more that we can let nature take its course in terms of food and, you know, having your own gardens and that kind of thing. But anyway, everybody knows that, right? Diet is important. And there's different trains of thought on what diet is best.
You can say everybody knows that. Unfortunately, what I find when we coach cancer patients is even though they've heard it maybe 100 times, people still are not doing it, or they're still struggling, or they're still finding themselves going back to the old ways of eating out a lot, eating processed food a lot, eating fast food, eating junk food, right? Like, so it's one of those things that we have to talk about again and again and again, but also help people find ways to change their habits for good and forever. And it's not something that happens overnight, as we know. And it's something that some people will struggle with their whole life. It's something we have to be diligent with every day, right? But what I have found is the cleaner I eat, or the cleaner I've eaten over the years, the less of the toxic things that I used to crave, like I just don't crave them anymore. Or if I do, it's really rare, once in a while. And then, you know, like ice cream. Like I used to eat so many sweets. I had to have sweets, like ice cream or cookies or something, after every meal, like every day, you know. And after years and years of cleansing and juicing and cleaning up my diet and eating raw food and like really eating less and less processed food and more whole foods, real foods, those cravings mostly went away. And sometimes I'll have them and then I'm like, yeah, I'll get a little bit of ice cream. I'll have a few spoonfuls and then I'm done. Like I don't eat the whole thing like I used to, you know, and the craving's gone. Or I'll put some honey, you know, on, or I'll have like some yogurt with some honey and banana and some berries and some almonds. And like, that's a way better, you know, sugar craving, take care of the sugar craving that's actually nutritious than going out and eating ice cream. It's just, but it's making the changes and being consistent with it, right? I mean, I still find,
yeah,
people who have been listening to this and trying this change their diet for years and years, they still struggle. They still struggle.
Yeah. I mean, your body, it does have an immense ability to adapt, but there's the physical side. And then there's the mental side. So as long as you believe those things have a benefit to you, you're going to want them. And so I think it's really important. And I've had addictions in my own life. So I've worked through those things. unfortunately more than once. But what I found out is that when I had associations to say alcohol or a drug, and I don't share this very often, by the way, so this is a secret between me and everybody listening.
All right, we'll keep it secret right here.
Yeah.
As my team cuts this clip and then sends it out viral, right?
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's totally fine. It's important to share these things, right? Because other people, we're all human and we struggle with different things and addictions, whether that's sugars or nicotine or whatever. Doesn't care about your belief in health. Like it really doesn't. It's a mindset thing, but I think it's really important. So there's like certain associations that you build to something. So let's say like it's ice cream or it's alcohol. You begin to, and you usually enjoy those things with people or an environment, at least at the beginning, that you enjoy the environment, but then you begin to say like, hey, Nathan, you and I are having this beer. And I can start to attribute our time together and the positive impact that I had from that to the alcohol. And so what you do is you deconstruct, what are all my beliefs about this thing that is telling me it's beneficial? You deconstruct those and you start to take a look at what it actually is. And then once you understand what it actually is, which is like a poison of like decayed fruit and vegetable matter, you don't crave it anymore. It's gone. And so there's, and I can't say exactly what it is for sugar, right? Or what it is for the individual. But I think there is something to the mindset aspect that is really important for people to work through. Otherwise, you're going to crave it. And you can diminish that. But once you get rid of the craving, you no longer need to use willpower. You no longer need to try to avoid it or kind of like, oh, I want that thing, but I can't have it. And that's all gone. And it's just so much easier. But I think that's important too. But you, also there is the physical, the adaptation. Your body does have an immense ability to adapt and get rid of those things that you crave, and then just have a new understanding of what it is to operate, to have a new understanding of, you know, you feel good, right? By eating foods. And so now you have that new understanding that you can operate off of that continually reinforces what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you bring up a good point. I talk about addiction a lot also. Similar to you. I mean, I went through a lot of addiction as a teenager and struggled with it in my early 20s, and, you know, drugs and alcohol and sugar and sex and drama and fights and you name it. Like, I was full blown addicted to a lot of stuff that's not good for you, right? and overcoming those addictions were very, very, very hard. And a lot of it was mental, emotional connection to it, right? A lot of it was there's a physical addiction. I mean, cigarettes, when I quit cigarettes cold turkey, I used to smoke 2 packs a day. And wow. when I quit cold turkey, it was a mindset thing first. It was, I'm done with this. I'm working out, I'm getting healthy, I'm changing my life. Cigarettes have no place in my life anymore. Now, up to that point, I tried quitting 6 or 7 times and could never last more than a day, right? Like, it just, I didn't have that strong enough reason to actually quit cigarettes until, you know, I moved, I was ready to change my life. I was making big changes. I changed my environment. And then I started going to the gym and I'd finish a workout and then I'd step outside the gym and light up a cigarette. And that association, I had this realization. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? You're trying to get healthy and exercise, you're working out, and then you step outside and you put this cancer in your body. Like, what are you doing? This is so insane. And when I finally had that big realization and a commitment to my health, I finally had a strong enough reason to quit cigarettes. And so that was, you know, I would say one of the easiest addictions I overcame, because once I had that strong enough reason, I was like, I'm quitting cigarettes. I told my roommates, you know, I think I was like 19, 20 years old. And I started smoking as early as like 9 years old. I mean, I was stealing my mom's cigarettes and smoking them with friends. And I was full blown addicted to cigarettes at like 13, 14 years old, I think, 15. I was smoking 2 packs a day all the way up until 19, 20. And then basically it was make that commitment, told my roommates, hey, I'm going to be an asshole for a few days, deal with it, I'm quitting smoking, you know. And it was done. Never touch a cigarette ever again. I found myself, the physical addiction is so crazy, right? The habit is so crazy. It was day 2 and I was sitting outside out in the chair where I used to smoke outside the apartment, and there was an ashtray there with like some half-litten cigarette butts, and I unconsciously grabbed one, put it in my mouth, and started to light it before I realized what I was doing. I was like, what are you doing? I threw it, you know, took all that, threw it in the garbage, yeah. And went to a job interview the next day, and I was sweating and shaking, and I was like, man, I'm sorry, I'm really not in a good place right now. I just quit cigarettes like 2 days ago.
Made a great interview, I'm sure.
I was like, sorry, my hand was like gushing, free, you know, like just pouring sweat, and sweating, I'm like, yeah. I was like, I better
get rid of all that stuff.
It's like, I better say something. But never, ever, to your point, never, ever once, you know, and that was 18 years ago, 19 years ago, never had a second thought about a cigarette ever again. Never counted days, never counted months, whatever, right? It was like, once it was done, it was done. Alcohol was much tougher for me and took years to finally get to that point. Hard drugs actually were a little bit easier. Not easy, but easier than the alcohol. You know, each one of those had their journey and had their time and had their challenges, but each one was mental, emotional, physical, even spiritual, you know. And like you said, you know, learning what it's really doing to the body, reminding myself every day how terrible this thing is that I'm doing to myself, what it's doing to me, how it's damaging me, how it's killing me. It's not good for me at all. You know, I convinced myself that wine was, I could have a glass or two a day of wine, right? It's good for me. Resveratrol, antioxidants, bullshit, right? We lie to ourselves. Like we find these little excuses to keep doing the things that we want to do because of the addiction to it, because of how we feel. When at the end of the day, poison is poison is poison. It's poison. Toxins in your processed food is poison. Fast food is poison. Alcohol is poison. Processed sugar is basically poison to your body. These things are poison. And that's what we have to fully accept before we can, you know, start to make the changes that you're talking about.
Yeah. And there's, you know, obviously the habits are the really insidious part of that. You know,
yeah.
I think it's like, we all know that, like, it's good to not eat sugar, but yeah, I'm going to have a cookie here and there. And that's okay too.
Sure.
But yeah, it is quite a journey. And I think we've actually talked about our addiction before, like in person, I generally share, but not on podcasts so much, but yeah, it's always really interesting to see people's journeys through addiction because it can vary so much. For me, it was just alcohol. I had tried a number of times to quit. I would make some progress, relapse on it. But then once I figured out that it's all this, and this is kind of like maybe even overcomplexifying it. I'm not really sure. But these associations that I had built around it, once I got rid of those, it was just gone. And so I have never wanted another drink again. It's actually called the CAR method. So that's what I went through and it worked for me phenomenally. Just amazing. But
how do you spell it?
Some pretty cool. C-A-R-R. Anybody struggling with addictions, I highly recommend going through that because it really works on that mindset thing. There needs to be the desire there. And I think that's the common thread through everything. And so understanding the negative impact of it and seeing it in your life and understanding how it's detrimental for your health, that will help to build the desire, but it isn't always enough to actually quit. And then I always thought I feel bad when people have that, like, you know, that craving for it consistently for many years later, because it's like, that's a bad sentence too. And so that's where I think that mindset stuff comes in, is where you still believe that's beneficial to you.
Exactly.
That's why you're craving it. You still think that's a good thing for you.
Even subconsciously.
With willpower. Yeah, subconsciously. It's really difficult to mine up those things and really understand what's going on here and how do I get rid of this craving.
It is. And most of it is subconscious, and it is those associations. Exactly. And the longer you have an addiction to something, sugar, drama, alcohol, you name it, the harder it is, because the I don't say the harder it is. Let's just say the more ingrained those associations are for most people. Right. Especially when that association is positive, when it's like, I have a few drinks after work because it calms me down, makes me feel good. You know, it takes the edge off, right? Like, it's just all of these associations, they're positive. And same thing for me. Like, I did this on my own. I wish I had knew about the CAR method back then. You know, it's like I relapsed so many times. And what you're saying to me was 100% true in my own case, was once I had enough negative associations that outweighed the positives, it got to a point where it was just like, okay, yeah, this no longer makes sense for me anymore. There is no more positive association with this. And in fact, there's 100 negative associations, you know, and they outweigh the positive associations that I had. And then same thing, once it was done, it was like, dude, I'll go out to, when I go to like mastermind events and stuff in San Diego, you know, I'll go out to, and I was a full-blown alcoholic, by the way, like drinking myself to death. It runs in my family.
Yeah.
It's, you know, many of my family members have, you know, unfortunately passed because of alcohol and drug addiction. And I was definitely headed down that path. Now, you know, this is years I've been sober. I can go to a nightclub in San Diego and, you know, drink a sparkling water, you know, while everyone's getting drunk and I'm out there dancing on the dance floor, having the time of my life.
Yeah, having the time of your life.
You know,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Then it's 11 o'clock and I, you know, 11 midnight, I head back to the hotel and I get to sleep sober, wake up feeling great. Everyone else gets back to the hotel at 2-3 in the morning. And then, you know, we meet up in the morning. They all got glasses on. They're all hungover. And I'm like, You got, yeah, you know, you guys are missing out, you know. It's
like it is true. Like, people are always like, yeah, I can totally relate to that sentiment, because I'm not traveling as much now, but last year I was traveling a lot, and people always inquiring about that. And like, well, you know, I'll go out with you guys. I have actually more fun now than when I drank, because I made a fool of myself. I was not, you know, wake up hungover, not feel good, and I can have fun. I don't have any like need to drink. Like, there's nothing in me that says I like need to do this thing. I just go and enjoy myself, and it's much better for it.
Life is so much better without alcohol. Am I right? Like, yeah, I had a lot of good times. I had a lot of crazy times, but at the end of the day, I think I had, if you add it all up, probably a lot worse times than good. If you were to really weigh it up.
Oh, by far.
Yeah. Right? And like, but being sober, it's like, I don't have that problem.
It wasn't the alcohol that was the good time. It was the thing you were doing.
Exactly.
You just happened to be drinking alcohol at the same time you're doing. So go do that thing. That thing is fun. Like, whatever it is, being a little goofy or hanging out with your friends, you can still go do that and have fun, but you don't need to drink alcohol. It's not the alcohol that makes it fun. It's the thing you're doing. That's the confusion that people get.
Well, and it does. I mean, we know alcohol, you know, it does kind of, let's say, lower inhibitions, right? People are less self judging to themselves, which is why, like, I got to that point where, look, I'll dance sober and I don't care how goofy I look, and I don't know how to dance. But what's funny, everyone else is drunk and they're watching me dance. They haven't like gotten drunk enough yet to go and dance. But the next day, everyone's like, man, you were tearing it up on the dance floor. You were so awesome. You're doing. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, I literally have no idea how to dance. I'm just like throwing myself around out there having fun, you know, like way more fun sober than, because I don't feel like shit the next day. And I know that I'm healthy and I'm feeling good. You know, it just, but it is tough. It's tough it was tough for me. And it's tough for a lot of people. It's not tough anymore for me, which is a blessing. But, ozone. I want to get back to ozone. So
we went through a lot of paths to get here, but here we are. I mean, it's better than most interviews, because it's usually like, how'd you get into this? What'd you do? Which I don't mind those questions, but they can be kind of boilerplate, right?
Yeah. No, that's kind of how it goes. We just jump all over the place and talk about a lot of unexpected stuff, and it turns out pretty awesome. So yeah, like, what, you know, tell me more about ozone. So you were using it with your brother and you saw good results, and then you basically like dove in head first into ozone. What are some of the crazy things you discovered that you had no idea that you could use ozone for, and have seen like crazy results with it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can use it for. So that is one of the things that drew me to it, is the versatility of it. So how can you have a molecule that's, it's ozone, but used in so many different capacities. So for example, it's tremendous in wound healing. Wound healing, it's absolutely tremendous for. In fact, I am still confused why not every wound care clinic in the country doesn't utilize it, because it's just so effective. So that's one example, right? Another example is you can use it in the form of an IV. So they pull out some blood, they mix in the ozone gas, and then put the blood back into the body. And that is helpful in four domains primarily. It's really helpful for microcirculation, so improved blood flow, et cetera, reduced chronic oxidative stress, which is really counterintuitive because it's an oxidant. So that's where people are like, well, I'm oxidatively stressed. Why would I use an oxidant? What happens is it stimulates a small amount of stress, and then your body responds by increasing the amount of endogenous antioxidants that it creates more antioxidants. And so they actually have studies on people going through chemotherapy and doing IV ozone, and they have controls and stuff too. But the group that does the IV ozone had a huge diminishment in the negative side effects of chemotherapy. And why is that? It's because it increases the antioxidant protection of the cells so much that they have like a 70% improvement in quality of life metrics. And this is pretty good research on this too. So, it's mitigating chronic oxidative stress. It's increasing oxygen efficiency. So that's why a lot of athletes use it. There's a lot of professional athletes, hockey players, baseball players, NFL players, et cetera. They don't really advertise it because they don't like to put their medical information out there, and the teams can use that against them, and certain things are banned, and they don't advertise it a whole lot. But we have worked with a lot of professional athletes who use it because it increases your oxygen delivery system. So your anaerobic threshold goes up. The anaerobic threshold is important for sports because if you're like jogging or running or whatever, you're using aerobic respiration. Your metabolism is taking in oxygen and basically using the oxygen at the same rate as it's metabolizing it. But once you go into anaerobic, you're less efficient. You're getting less energy output and you're using up, building up more lactic acid. So if you raise the ceiling on that, what happens is you can run for longer without tiring out. So the experience that they have is they fatigue less quickly, essentially. So that's anaerobic threshold, oxygen delivery. And the fourth thing, why am I going blank on it? So chronic oxidative stress, microcirculation. Oh, immune modulation, of course. So immune modulation is balancing out the immune system. I'm sure you've talked about a lot of products that do it. So it's balancing out the immune system. That's why it's used in autoimmune disorders and immunosuppressed. So if they're immunosuppressed, it raises it up. If they're high, like an autoimmune disorder, the body attacking itself, it quiets it down. The way that it does this, though, is not that ozone is intelligent. It's enacting your body's own intelligence to be able to do these things. So it's using the stress response, like you would have in a sauna or an ice bath or exercise, to as a catalyst to get your body up and running and doing what it's supposed to be doing. So increasing the antioxidants, improving the circulation, and the circulation improvement is pretty substantial too. That's why it's used in like peripheral vascular disease and whatnot. So that's kind of like what it's doing in a broad brushstroke. And IV ozone, rectal ozone, vaginal ozone all kind of do that same thing. IV ozone would be if there's like infections, that would probably be the best. Rectal ozone would be if there's gut issues and you want that systemic effect. That would probably be the best. Vaginal ozone, same thing, vaginal issues, or you want that systemic effect. And then there's like ways to apply it onto the skin, such as the ozone oil, the bagging. You can put it into the ears for ear infections, ear issues, ear, nose, and throat issues. So there's a lot of different applications for it. So it's pretty versatile.
If you use it topically, like as an oil, infused oil, does that ozone actually, because I know ozone only lasts like, you know, very short time, right? Like if you put ozone in a bottle and you like, it's basically like,
that's why you can't sell it in a bottle format. You need to generate it on site. Yeah.
So you infuse oil and then you put that like on your skin. Does that go in systemically, like into your bloodstream? Because we know things you put on your skin, you know, will get into your bloodstream, but does ozone actually get in the bloodstream that way? Do you know?
No. So when you infuse it into an oil, it creates a peroxide. So it'd actually be more accurately called a peroxide oil, which is different than hydrogen peroxide, but it's a peroxide. But to my knowledge, it's not getting a systemic benefit in the same way that rectal or vaginal or IV would. There's some limited research on its effect in like muscle soreness and that kind of stuff. So it seems to be positive, but we don't. I don't think we really know the effects of that for sure yet. So with time, I think that'll get figured out. It's also not an area, because there's all these other ways to use it, that physicians are, and I'm talking about the integrative physicians kind of in our circle more, but they're not so much using like the ozonated oil across the body to see what effect that's going to have systemically when they have these other ways of doing it that are pretty tried and true.
So like the athletes you were talking about are like improving athletic performance, how are they using it generally?
Usually IV, rectal would probably be better and easier. It's not glamorous, but it works pretty well. So it's kind of the counterpart to doing an IV, but a lot of people can't get their mind around that and be willing to do it, right? Because it's
sticking something
like
up
I said,
butt,
it's not glamorous. But... Yeah, right. So a lot of people don't want to do rectal insufflation because it's an enema, but they'll do the IV format typically. And that's also easier to introduce somebody to in an IV than being like, hey, you need to shove ozone gas up your butt. It's like,
how often would someone use ozone therapy? Like, let's say someone's interested in longevity, performance, anti-aging, health maintenance versus somebody dealing with a chronic disease like cancer. Like what are those, frequencies?
Yeah, so
like
There's a few ways that you could dice it up. So for somebody that's like sick and wants to get well, and they're taking that seriously, they might do it like an IV twice a week, or they might do rectal insufflation 5 times a week. And that's for somebody that, you know, is taking it a little bit more aggressively, trying to get a good response over time. For people that are healthy and want to be on the proactive side, or they're athletes, you can do it in groupings where, like, say you do that 5 times a week for a month, and then you kind of don't do it for another 6 months or so. Or you could spread it out to where you're doing it like twice a week, maybe an IV, you know, once a week for 4 weeks. But typically, so somebody just doing it as a preventative or for athletics, 2 to 3 times a week is kind of normal. But you could just like group it together in a month, do like more, and then not do it again for 6 months. That cycling is actually an important part of it. And that grouping together does have a good effect because it compounds on itself. It's not like a three IVs are 3 times better than one. It's more like 6 times better than one if you do it in a tight enough window. So it compounds on itself to get more antioxidant production and more effects if you do it in a window. You also don't want to overdo it. That's why it's like you don't do it every day. You do it 5 times a week for the rectal insufflation because it is a stress. So you don't exercise all day, 10 hours a day. That's just breaking the body down. You exercise a few hours a day or a couple hours a day, 4 to 5 times a week.
How's ozone made? Can you talk about the process of ozone?
Yeah. So when we're talking about ozone, we're talking about a gas. I don't know if we even said that. This gas can be infused into water, into oil, but usually it's used as in the gas format. So the ozone insufflations, the rectal insufflation, that is taking the gas and sticking where the sun don't shine. But essentially, we use an oxygen tank, and we have what's called an ozone generator. These are ozone generators. For this, are specially made laboratory grade materials. They don't degrade, they don't break down, and produce toxic elements, essentially. So it's important to have a laboratory grade generator, essentially. But you have the oxygen, it goes through the generator, and that has a high frequency in it, an electrical frequency, and that breaks apart the ozone or the oxygen, and it recombines into ozone. And then these machines control the rate at which that happens and whatnot, so that you have like particular concentrations that you might want to use and whatnot. But that's how it's working. It's taking an oxygen tank, breaking down the oxygen and converting it into ozone.
Which, for people who don't know, you know, oxygen is O2, right? And ozone is O3. It's three atoms or three molecules of oxygen, right? That are put together.
Correct. Yep. So it's O3. It's closely related to oxygen, but obviously has very different properties because of its instability. And that's also why you can't bottle it. It's because it turns back into oxygen over the course of a couple of hours.
Where do you find ozone in the atmosphere, like as a gas?
Yeah, I mean, it would be the ozone layer. So that's utilized to prevent the harmful forms of radiation from the sun entering the atmosphere. So a lot of people have heard of the ozone layer because they'll talk about the hole in the ozone layer. They used to. And so, yeah, that's a layer of ozone gas that covers the entire planet and protects us from harmful radiation from the sun. Our bodies actually naturally make ozone too. A lot of people don't know that. It's a part of our immune system. So it's something that is native to our bodies, but a lot of people aren't aware of that. In nature, the other place that you'll find it is like thunderstorms. So when lightning comes down, that frequency, that electricity, splits the oxygen, and some of them recombine into ozone. So you can actually smell it after a lightning storm sometimes.
So the only thing, so if people want to use ozone at home, they need to get an ozone generator, a machine, right? And then what they would refill is an oxygen tank. So that's the only thing they need to, like, you know, fill up.
Yeah, like once a year.
Once a year.
Yeah, it's not super frequent. So you get a machine and you're kind of set for a long time, and then refilling the tank is like $20. So yeah, it's pretty inexpensive. If you go to metaskill.com, you can there's a guide on there that walks through everything and how to do it. And, you know, we share kind of our stories on it. I have a team of people that work with it too, but that guide kind of walks through all the different ways that it can be done. So right up at the top there, it says download the definitive guide.
Yeah, Mediskill, MediSkill.com. Yeah, I was looking through this. You have a ton of information on basically, you know, different types of ozone, how to do it, home use, physician guided, intravenous, equipment, home user. So is there equipment? Is there any brands of equipment you recommend?
Just whatever you put in the bottom of this podcast.
Oh, here's the guide. So here's the guide that you're talking about. This is the one that people can download for free at the top right here, this link. Free yep. definitive yep. guide. Nice. I'm going to have to start doing ozone, dude.
I thought you were already, but no, yeah, we can get you set up with the machine.
I haven't been, no.
Yeah, just hit me up. Be happy to get you everything.
Cool. Well, I mean, I've done a bunch of research out there, and the company I recommend for people to check out if you're interested in an ozone machine is from Simply O3. You guys can check them out. But I do recommend going to this website, metaskill.com, and educating yourself further on ozone and ozone therapy if you're interested in this. If people want to get an IV and work with a doctor who uses ozone, who's been trained, because you guys train doctors, right? Like, where is there like a list of doctors that people can find, or do they just have to Google it, or what?
You know, we used to have a list on the website, but it's obviously a bit of work to do upkeep on all the different physicians. There's many thousands in the United States that provide ozone services. And now with like concierge nurses and, you know, remote drips and all that kind of thing, there's many, many, many thousands of people. So the best way actually is just to go into Google Maps and search ozone therapy near me. And then, you know, give that physician a call, make sure it's, you know, doing the type of ozone that you want. And that's the best way to find somebody who does it.
It's
pretty accurate.
I just Googled it, and yeah, I found a bunch that popped up here in Jacksonville, for example. So that's easy.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's good catching up, and good to see you, man. Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. I appreciate it. It was a great time. It's kind of cool just to be able to talk about whatever's on our mind. So I appreciate the format that you bring to people, and I hope it's helpful.
Awesome. All right, man. We'll see ya.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.